This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Kiwi Talks. I have in the studio with me the chief executive of Tainui Group Holdings. I'd like to welcome Chris Jovlin. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thank you.
It's all right. Thanks thanks for coming through. First thing I want to know is, how does a kid from Gisborne end up becoming the chief executive of Tainui? How did it all come about?
Yeah, for me, basically grew up in Gisborne, normal sort of family upbringing, and I guess where I've got to where I am is, I've taken opportunities along the way. So I spent a lot of time, I guess, in my background's in finance. So went to university, studied accounting and finance, started being an accountant. But what I did along the way is, rather than focusing on doing accounting, financial stuff, I sort of branched off more into the commercial side of things and how you basically make money. And what that's enabled me to do is to really grow and move beyond finance and into where I am now as a chief executive.
Yeah, because you did some work in the UK.
Yeah, I did. I spent nearly 6 years out of New Zealand. And in that, worked for a company called Pendragon PLC, which largest retailer of cars in the UK and a bit through Europe and North America. So, as a Kiwi lad, in the UK, it presented huge opportunities. Working in a big corporate, but also where there was opportunities to really grow. So what it enabled me to do was to take opportunities along the way and really develop. And, I learned quite a few things along the way, but the most important was to make sure that you take opportunities. And sometimes those opportunities come in the least expected ways. And
can you give me an example?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I did, I worked a lot with businesses that weren't going so well.
Right.
And helping, tidying them up and starting from a financial perspective and then moving into the more sort of corporate and commercial things. So working with those businesses quite often, they were in places or, were in a state that people didn't really want to work or didn't want to take on those challenges, but I was prepared to do that, and each time I did that, I grew in terms of my skills, my knowledge, but also your experiences, and that enables you to develop your career and certainly gives you accelerated advancement.
Was that always the plan? Was it always the plan to go to the UK, and did everything just fall into place, or were you kind of winging it while you were doing it?
A bit of both. I mean, I went over there to usual sort of Kiwi stuff, play a bit of rugby and do a bit of travelling. And, what I pretty quickly worked out is that being, beholden to other people, playing sport and other things is probably not a great place to be. And so I went out and got my own job and at Pendragon and really cut my own path.
Yeah. And what made you decide to come back? You didn't want to stay there?
Family was the reason, which is same for everyone else. So my wife and I, we're very settled in the UK. We owned our own house, both had really great jobs. But we'd reached the point where we were ready to start a family, and it was pretty much, if we had have stayed in the UK, we would have stayed there forever.
Yeah, yeah.
So we made that sort of conscious choice to come back, and yeah, I have to be honest, we were probably a little bit hesitant, yeah, in coming back.
Why were you hesitant?
Oh, just, you know, again, we were really settled, had great jobs, great opportunities. So it was coming back a little bit into an unknown.
Yeah.
But it's all worked out for the best.
Yeah, obviously. But did you plan to settle in Waikato? Or did you have any plan when you decided to come back? Or
yeah, we did have a plan. My wife's she grew up in Huntley. So, you know, there was sort of the pull to this region. You know, originally we were looking at opportunities in Tauranga.
Oh, yeah.
When I first come back and got offered a job at AFCO and sort of, yeah, the rest is history. So I went and worked there for 7-odd years and really enjoyed it.
So how did they approach you? Did you approach them?
Yeah, I just got approached by a headhunting firm and, I was really intrigued. You know, obviously you see the things that Tiny Group Holdings has been doing. So I was really interested, and it just came at a time, you know, having worked for AFCO for that length of time, I was ready for a change.
Yeah. Was there anything you were not prepared for when you became chief executive there? Or did you kind of just settled into the role quite well?
Yeah, it's not something I planned for, to be frank. And yeah, you know, I had the opportunity to do it on an acting basis, and found that I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, and it suited, you know, my skills, and yeah, you know, so yeah, you know, put my head in the ring for the role permanently, and went through a competitive process, and yeah, thankfully I was the candidate that the board chose to lead the company forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because obviously you guys have a lot of things in the works. Obviously, a few things that have been announced within the last few weeks. But obviously, the inland port is a massive one.
Yeah.
How much time and planning has gone into that? Like, when was the original pitch for that?
It's been over 10 years in the making.
Oh, wow. Okay, so a long time.
Yeah, a long time to go through what was initially the regulatory pieces. So, yeah, getting the land appropriately zoned and brought into the city.
And how long does that take?
Oh, that took years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty complicated convoluted process. But, yeah, I went through all that. And then more recently, sort of 5-6 years ago, we went through the Board of Inquiry, or basically calling it in as a project of national significance. So that was done to give us regulatory certainty around what we could develop at Ruakura. And more recently, you know, you sort of start at a high level and you narrow in, and where we are now, we recently... last week announced bringing in Port of Tauranga as a partner for the actual inland port itself. And now that the Waikato Expressway, now that there's certainty around when that's going to open, late 21, early 2022, we can really push and accelerate our development plans.
Yeah, so what is that exactly? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that still don't actually know exactly what it is. I've had a few people on the show who live here and they still don't know what it is.
Yeah, so at its heart, Ruakura is a 480-hectare piece of whenua that sits, land that sits just to the east of the city by the university. And in that land, you've got two key pieces of infrastructure. One is the Waikato Expressway that's being built. And secondly, you've got the East Coast Main Trunk Line for rail. And when you think about the nexus of effectively State Highway 1 and, you know, the main rail corridor, you know, it just screams logistics and industrial, you know, development. So, you know, that's really at its heart. You've got an inland port that will sit there, and I'll come back to what that is. and then the surrounding land used for things like distribution centres and, you know, light industrial activity. But it's really about moving freight, you know, containers and how people get their goods from port to customer and from exporters to the port and ultimately to their customers overseas. So the inland port itself, it's a pretty simple sort of business. What you're doing is you're taking containers from exporters in the region and in the North Island, putting them onto rail and then railing those containers to the port. And for importers, railing full containers back into the inland port, and then it goes to a distribution centre, gets unloaded, and might have TVs, jeans, food, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you take that empty container and you send it next door to the exporter, and then they put their goods in it, goes back on the train back to the port. So in doing that, there's a couple of key things that makes this huge for the region and huge for the country. Is at the moment, most of our imports come into Auckland. Imported goods come into Auckland, and most of our exported goods come out of or go out of Tauranga. So if you think about goods come in, a container gets emptied, that container then has to get to the exporters to get filled up again.
Right.
And the further that the import supply chain, i.e. where the importers are from the exporters, the more cost. So if you can put the importers and the exporters together, facilitated by an inland port, you just lower the cost for everyone, makes it hugely more efficient. And it's also, you know, great from a sustainability environmental point of view. So the likes of Ruakura will bring 65,000 truck movements off the road a year.
So what would be the point then of having something like the port of Auckland move to, up near Whangarei Way?
Yeah, to Northport.
Yeah.
Ultimately, any change in port location for Auckland, you know, whilst there's a political process that's being driven or considered, ultimately the cargo owners all decide which port they use.
Right.
They own the cargo, they'll decide which port they use, and ultimately that will come down to cost.
Mm.
Yeah, so they'll look at what's the most efficient way for them to access their customers overseas, and then they will make their choice. What Ruakura does is it facilitates that for them. So, you know, where that freight goes, that ultimately is decided by the customer.
Yeah.
But in our region, the bulk of it is going to Port of Tauranga already.
So in regards to the collaboration with them,
mm-hmm.
was it a long time coming? Like, how much discussion did you have with them? Are they managing it? Like, how much are they managing it and how much are you managing it? Or is it like a 50-50 split?
Yeah, it's a 50-50 joint venture.
Yeah.
Where we will build and develop and own the inland port together. I guess, you know, Port of Tauranga, we've been working with them around various things for quite some time, and over that sort of time that we've been talking with them, where we started initially around how we access their trains and so on, it became really obvious that there was a real strategic advantage in us working together. And so as we started to explore those things, you know, it just came from there. You know, it was just obvious to both of us that we had really good alignment of values, that strategically we wanted the same things in terms of how we envisaged the supply chain working. You know, the customers that we were talking to were also working with Port of Tauranga, so there was good alignment there. So it just made really good sense. And, you know, dealing with the team there, they're very good to deal with. You know, there's just, you know, a good camaraderie and it just all just naturally, you know, fell into place.
So how long will this actually take to finish, to build the entire port?
So the first stage of the port it'll take about 18 months to build.
Okay.
And the reason for that, you don't really develop the stuff over winter. So you do it over summer when it's dry.
Right. Okay.
And the other thing is, it's all prefaced on opening at the same time as the Waikato Expressway, because you're going to want to access those road networks.
Okay.
Yeah. You know,
so that's why it was originally delayed.
Correct.
Is that because of the expressway being delayed?
So the expressway was delayed 2 years.
Yep.
Roughly. So what we've had to do is slow down our development program, because no one wants to have an inland port and distribution centres that don't have access to road.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think people in the community have probably been wondering what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And really that has been driven by the timing of the road. Again, our development program has always been prefaced on opening up, at a similar time to the Waikato Expressway.
Mm. And do you work in conjunction with the airport and NZTA and even the government? Like, how much talks have you had with all those guys?
Yeah, lots.
Because I suppose you're having to work with so many different partners on this.
Yeah, you do. We talk a lot, with central government around the Hamilton to Auckland corridor, and I guess the role that Ruakura plays in that. We also talk with NZTA around roads and what have you. So one of the big things with Ruakura is it's of such size and scale and importance to the supply chain, in New Zealand. There's just real acceptance from all those parties, around getting this thing going, and it's going to drive, huge economic benefits for our region and for our country.
Yeah, well, it's one of the biggest infrastructure projects in the history of New Zealand, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't think of any industrial logistics, developments of that size and scale, 480 hectares.
Because I saw on the website, because obviously there's the port side of it, and then you've got like a housing, obviously, and like an education. Is it, what is it, like an education campus?
Yeah, because you've got the university nearby and obviously the Ag Research Campus. So it's all designed to facilitate, those uses that are already there as well.
Yeah.
Protect and enhance those.
Mm. So in regards to the base,
mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of stories about this, but are you guys finished in terms of everything that's there, or is there plans for other developments there? I mean, there's a big pot of green land that really just becomes a car park during Boxing Day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I read somewhere that I think it was the Kiwi Property CEO about some line of restaurants or something going near there.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, we're always looking to develop in advance. So, no, the base is not finished.
Okay.
Yeah, it will continue to grow. And, we're focused on how we build greater amenity value. So what you're likely to see there is not necessarily a huge extension of shops, but bring in other things like, office, community, the connection with the rail platform that's currently being built.
Right. So are you looking to see how successful that rail is first before you implement anything?
No, I think rail is going to be successful.
You do think it's going to be successful?
Yep, I think it's going to be successful. And I think, this initial startup service will, I think, quickly move, or maybe not quickly, but it'll move into a fast rail connection between Hamilton and Auckland.
Right.
I think that is inevitable. And, I think really important, in terms of the infrastructure of the Upper North Island.
I agree. I heard, and I don't know if this is true, so you can nip this rumor in the bud, that part of the reason you guys hadn't built anything is because the council had implemented some type of bylaw to stop you guys from building there. Is that true?
There was some changes some time ago. It was probably 8-odd years ago where, there was a plan to restrict, not just us, but restrict retail and office development outside of the CBD. That got overturned.
Did it? Yeah. Oh, when was that?
Yeah, it was about 8 years ago. So, you know, for us, you know, we're consented at the base, so we can fully develop out the site.
Yeah.
And, you know, what that basically means is, you know, up to 10,000 square metres of office and a bunch of retail. And you can see also surrounding there, once you put a rail platform in, people are going to want to live there. Yeah, and the adjoining area as well.
Isn't that mostly industrial area though?
You've got Rotokauri, you know, the subdivision out the back of the base to the west.
They're already developing that. We're developing that with
other people as well in that vicinity. So you're going to see a big population base out there. And if you can catch a train to Auckland in under an hour, you're going to want to live there, and people are going to live in Hamilton and they're going to work in Auckland.
Because I've had, obviously, numerous politicians on here, Labour and National, and, you know, they both have their views on how successful rail will be. But have you spoken to both parties in regards to where you want this to go?
Oh, we're really positive and big on rail.
Yeah.
So, we talk to anyone that will listen, on that front. Our big push and position is you got to get fast rail. Yeah, it's got to be under an hour to downtown Auckland.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, it's transformational. Yeah.
I agree. I think not
just for Hamilton, but for Auckland as well.
Yeah, because I think there's a huge, influx of people that are in Auckland, and it's putting major pressure on the infrastructure as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because you probably know from living in the UK, but there's a lot of people that commute from outside the main cities into the main cities for work.
Yep.
But it's a bit more difficult to do in Auckland because you don't have a reliable public transport system, well, compared to overseas anyway.
Yeah, and that's where as a country we need to be investing in that level of infrastructure. And it only gets more expensive to put in.
Yeah.
You know, so the cheapest time to do it is now.
Was it jarring for you when you came back from the UK and having to go from their public transport to ours?
Like most Kiwis, if you travel overseas into Europe or North America and you use the wonderful public transport systems that they have and you come back home and you just think, why haven't we got it?
Yeah.
Small population base has been used as an excuse, yep. But...
I've heard National MPs say that.
Yeah, you've got nearly 2 million people now living in Auckland. And in our region, in our lifetimes, there'll be over 1 million people living in the Waikato. So, this is coming. Yeah, and we just need to get ahead of it.
So have you made suggestions to the central government? Have you put in your 10 cents you need to do this?
Yeah, the thing that we like is what's called a Pandolino train.
What's that exactly?
It's basically a train that leans when it goes around the corners.
Oh, right. Okay.
So then you don't have to spend huge money, upgrading tracks and so on. You know, it can utilise a lot of what's already there.
Mm.
So lower the cost, but you'll be in Auckland in an hour and a half, depending on how many places it stops.
I think Jamie Strange, when he was on here, he mentioned that you'd have to build a whole new line in order to do that, though.
Depending on what kind of train you want to put in.
Yeah.
So typically high-speed rail networks use a wide-gauge tracks and New Zealand's narrow-gauge tracks. But with the Pandolino train, you can use the narrow-gauge track and, you get up to about 160, 170 kilometres an hour for a train, which by European and North American standards is not fast. But by New Zealand standards, that's almost light speed.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can get to a point where you can get from an hour from Hamilton to Auckland, I think that is a game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But wouldn't there be a huge influx of people moving here?
Yeah, you're going to get people that move here, but that's happening anyway.
Yeah, it is. I think the 40 people move here a week, I think. I think that's a number that council said to me. I think, yeah.
Yeah, there's huge number of people moving to the region, and this is happening whether we like it or not. Mm. You know, the challenge for us is how do we embrace it and get ahead of the growth that's coming so that we don't end up like Auckland. You know,
yeah.
That's you know, where we need to be thinking is making the investments now so that we can still enjoy the lifestyle that we have, you know, with a higher population base.
Yeah. Now, you guys are obviously extending your hotel currently. Yep. Is there plans to build another one? I think you mentioned it at some point at one of the Grow Waikato events maybe, that potentially in the future. Because Jason Dawson was on here and he was saying that a lot of conventions, business people hold conferences here, but a lot of the times they end up having to push people away because there's not enough hotel space.
Yep. Yeah, we're just building and finishing a 40-room extension on the Novotel locally and in Hamilton, and we're also jointly with Auckland Airport building a 311-room Pullman hotel called Te Ariki Nui at Auckland Airport next to the Novotel there. So, yeah, hotels is a big part of what we do, and yes, we would like to build another hotel in Hamilton at some point in time. We just don't think that the market is big enough yet to do that.
How big does the market have to be?
So I'll give you an example. You know, you've got so Jason, you know, talked about some of the conferences that we don't get.
Yeah.
So if you have a 500-person conference and they stay in the city for two nights, you know, that's a 1,000 room nights.
Yeah.
And we might be missing out on three or four of those conferences a year.
Right.
And then, you know, the city's full when we have, you know, field days and rugby. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So we go and build another Novotel-sized hotel in the city, 206 rooms. You know, that's, you know, nearly 70,000 room nights. So these conferences will fill 5,000 or 6,000 room nights a year. Where does the other, you know, 60-odd thousand room nights get filled from?
Right.
And that's the challenge, you know. So you can't build these things, you know, for a supply that's going to happen, you know, 2 weeks a year. You've still got to fill the hotel in the intervening period outside of events, and that's where the economics, you know, don't stack up.
Mm.
But it will come.
Oh, yeah.
It's... Yeah, as the city grows and we get more office and corporate into the CBD, and tourism as well, you know, all those things facilitate the development of another hotel.
Yeah, and I suppose you're kind of competing with Airbnbs at the same time, aren't you?
Not so much for our hotels. You know, it's more, you know, our customers are more corporate, and government travellers. Small amount come from offshore, but it's largely, you know, people doing business, you know, in our region.
Okay. Now, in regards to members of Tainui, so what's the value of, because you have, what, 78,000 members?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the value of being a member? What are the great things about being a member of Tainui?
Yeah, it's the connectivity. Yeah, it is, you know, all about whakapapa and connection.
Mm.
You know, all those, you know, cultural links, you know, is the most important. You know, so whilst, you know, my role is to lead the commercial part of Waikato Tainui, you know, the most important is the cultural and tikanga and so on.
Yeah.
You know, that basically, you know, our role is, you know, in a small way to support that. But for us, you know, we take our role really seriously and what we do for our iwi. And how I describe it to people is, you know, our focus is to be relevant to our owners and to our community. And how we be relevant is not necessarily about, you know, how much money we make. You know, it's the little things that we do around helping people find employment, housing, We have a scheme called Pātaka Kai where we distribute, food off our farms and so on to marae. It's the little things that become really important.
How come these things you don't really see in the media, though? Like, nobody seems to know, about this stuff, what you guys do for the community.
Yeah, I think there's an element where we probably don't share as much of what we do. And, TGH, is a huge role in the community. We employ directly or indirectly just over 4,000 people. The businesses that we own and work with, they're spending nearly $500 million a year in our community. And, that goes unknown or unnoticed. But, this is the role that and the benefits of having, a large iwi corporate domiciled in our region is, the benefits of that investment flow to everyone.
Yeah. So how does one become a member? Because you can be part of Tainui but not necessarily be a member, correct?
So if you're Wakara Tainui, it's all about whakapapa. It's about genealogical links.
Yeah.
You're born into the iwi.
Hmm. But there's some people that don't even know that they can become a member.
Yep.
Yeah. So how would they go about finding out?
Yeah. So if you're interested in understanding your whakapapa and how that links back to Waikato Tainui, you've got the tribe basically has a team of people that work through that and will help you look at your whakapapa and how that links into Waikato Tainui and your marae and so forth.
So there's somebody that would actually know within probably the families of these people.
That's right.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Or they could contact the marae or
anything? Yeah, that's right. And basically register as a tribal member.
Right. Okay. So it's as simple as that.
Yep. And encourage anyone that has whakapapa links back to Waikato Tainui to do that.
Because I've talked to a few Māori people and they didn't know really anything about it, which I found interesting. Mm. Okay. But so in terms of how it's money and all that's distributed back to the whakapapa, how does that actually work? Does it go to the member themselves or does it go to the chief and then it trickles down? Like, how does that actually all work?
Yeah, how it works is, so we're a corporate, commercial company. We pay a dividend to effectively the social arm of the tribe.
Right.
And they use that dividend to fund a bunch of social initiatives. Yeah, and that stems, biggest being education. So the tribe's supported over 10,000 people into further education. But education from preschool to effectively tertiary or university, and all through that spectrum. Supporting a lot of our kaumātua, elderly, to get, access to healthcare. Really basic things that help your life, like having dentures and glasses and so forth. Mm. There's been publicity, over the last 12 months around the Mokopuna Aura program that the tribe runs around, connecting, people in care back to their whānau, etc. So it's the genesis of what the tribe does, and Donna Flavel, our tribal CEO, is probably best to speak to this, but it's about a hand. It's about a hand up, not a hand out. And that's the philosophy.
Okay. That's interesting. In regards to back to the inland port, because I had David Bennett on this show,
mm-hmm.
and he seemed to think that you guys would find it difficult finding people to lease out that area. Is that the case or no?
No.
No. And I read somewhere that you guys had spoken to Amazon.
Oh, we've spoken to a heap of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So leasing buildings and land is not an issue.
Not an issue. There you go, David.
Yeah. It's yeah. The biggest issue with Ruakura, I think, is it's going to be too small.
Really? You think it's going to be too small?
Yeah, I mean, when you got people...
Initially, you know, or like just over time?
Once it's fully developed, yeah. Well, yeah, 480 hectares of land, but when you got people that want 100,000 square metre building, yeah, like you think about that, a 10 hectare size building.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for you to consume, yeah, a big chunk of land.
Well, yeah, and I suppose, I mean, what, could you look at more rezoning of other land close to Ruakura?
I think as a region, you know, we're going to see more and more industrial and logistics activity.
Yeah.
And whether it's at Ruakura or elsewhere, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think as a region, because of where we are in our proximity to Auckland and the rest of the North Island, you're going to see a lot more logistics activity in our region. And so you mentioned Amazon, you know, earlier. Yeah, one of the big things around the Amazon effect, if you like, is around same-day delivery. So if you're a customer, you know, in America now, they've gone firstly to same-day delivery, where you order something online and it gets delivered the same day.
Yeah.
Now to where, you know, you have... Basically, you order from Amazon and you pretty much get delivered within an hour or two. So that's the progression. So if you're where New Zealand's going to go, firstly, it'll be the same-day delivery. So if you have your distribution activity in Auckland, you can't do same-day delivery to the North Island.
Yeah, that's true.
But you can from Hamilton. And that's one of the big step changes that's coming.
Is that just because of how the city's been designed and how the rail network is, it's already been implemented?
Our geographical proximity.
Yeah, to everywhere.
Yep.
Well, not everywhere, but majority of the North Island.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, you can send a truck from Hamilton or train.
Yeah.
And you can, you can get goods to people same day. So, you know, that's the people that we talk to, you know, they're not thinking about the supply chain of today, you know, how you get things, you know, to and from, you know, manufacturer and port to customer. They're looking at what those global trends are and where they need to be, you know, in the future. So you can't just think about what you see today. You got to look and look at what it is going to be different going forward. And as I say, same-day delivery is a trend that is going to come because... Yeah, if you can't do same-day delivery, how do you compete, you know, with the big online retailers?
Yeah, I agree. Are you for drones sending parcels or taking parcels to people?
Yeah, I haven't seen that personally, so I'm not sure how that'll work.
Oh, but... yeah, I think it would make too much noise, so that's why I thought I'd ask, and then you run the risk of if it falls out of the sky, you could potentially hurt someone. So
yeah.
Because I think I've read somewhere that Amazon were looking at that, but I don't know how... logistically possible that is.
Yeah, they've trialled it. Yeah, I know that. How successful, I'm not sure, but yeah, Amazon, yeah, trying lots of different things. You know, one of the things that had the opportunity to do last year was see their trial sort of supermarket.
Yeah.
Where there's no checkout.
Oh, did you go to the States and see
this? Yeah. You know, so basically you pick something up off the shelf and it basically knows that you've bought it,
right.
So you don't go to a checkout. It just all flows through. And, you know, when you start to think about things like that, you know, there's some pretty cool stuff coming.
Ah, okay, that's interesting. So did you speak to Amazon directly or did they come to you? Like a lot of these businesses, do you approach them or do they approach you? Is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both, yeah.
Yeah? Mm. So how do you pitch it to them? How do you like, wow, we're building this port?
Yeah, I mean, we talk to what the attributes are of Ruakura and, you know, why it's important for them to be there, what it means for them. And ultimately, the key things for our customers, it's around firstly, supply chain risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so people say, so you know, you had the Rena disaster, you've had a couple of earthquakes.
Yeah.
People are looking at how do they ensure that they can get their goods to and from market?
Yeah.
And what happens if there's a disruption to the supply chain, you know, to a port or a rail link, etc. So that's top of people's minds. Also, we talked about same-day delivery, but also for exporters, it's access to empty containers. So you've got, you know, the situation now where if you're an exporter in our region, you send a truck up to Auckland or Tara, typically, and that truck goes and picks up an empty container,
yep,
brings it back to Hamilton, that container gets loaded with goods, you know, milk powder, meat, etc., and then goes back to the port. So, you know, you think about as a country, the inefficiency of moving around all those empty containers by road.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that the cost of that, you know, is roughly $1 billion a year. So if you can have a full container coming into one location and a full container going out, the country as a whole, you know, will save, you know, $1 billion.
Rather than just getting trucks off the road, I suppose, is one of the main things.
Yeah, well, basically you're moving goods, you know, whether it be by road or rail, that are full, you know, rather than shipping air.
You guys seem to be very ahead of the curve. Like, you guys seem to be thinking like 30 to 50 years ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it's 30 to 50 years, but we do think that far advance, But the things, you know, that we see, you know, this stuff is going to be in 5 years, not 50.
Oh, really? That soon?
Yeah, this stuff is coming quickly.
Okay.
You know, it's coming quicker than people look. You know, great example, you know, I'm old enough to, you know, the point where, yeah, cell phone, these didn't exist, you know, when I was at school and university. Yet now, you know, kids are growing up with them, even, you know, the modern devices.
Yeah.
You know, what, the 7-8 years?
Yeah. Well, I suppose technology's evolving very, very fast.
So that pace of change, you know, is huge, and it's going to continue.
Yeah. That's interesting stuff. So where do you see Hamilton in the future? What would you like to see in terms of Hamilton, I suppose the CBD as well?
Yeah, firstly, I think Hamilton is going to go through a massive renaissance, and the Waikato region as a whole. I think our moment is yet to come, but it's coming really quickly.
When do you think that moment will be?
It's already started. So I think as a region, we're going to go through exponential growth.
Okay.
Yeah. And you think about a city in terms of growing up in size and scale, it means that not only economically do you grow, but off the back of that, you can grow socially and culturally as well.
Yeah.
So that's really important because scale gives you those things. I think just the growth in New Zealand is all going to occur in the Golden Triangle between Hamilton, Auckland, Tauranga. Yeah, and there's studies that have come out recently that point to nearly 70% of the country's population will reside in that area.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So even today, you know, the only cities in New Zealand that are really growing is Auckland, Hamilton, Tauranga and Queenstown. Pretty much everywhere else is in either stagnant or in decline. You know.
Yeah, really? Even Wellington?
Yep. You know, so you've got this massive shift of population and economic activity that's coming into the region. So our big challenge is how do we embrace it and how do we ensure that we maximise that opportunity that's coming but not give away what makes Hamilton the Waikato uniquely Hamilton and the Waikato. So that's the challenge, you know, for us because this is coming whether we like it or not.
Mm.
So we're better off to, you know, embrace it and direct it in a way that is going to be really positive.
In terms of future developments, though, I suppose you'll have more developments going to happen in the CBD?
Yeah, so the Hamilton CBD again, you know, we announced a couple of weeks ago, you know, the ACC
Office
development. So, yeah, it brings in, you know, 650-odd people into the CBD. 8,500 square metre building, which will be one of the largest, if not the largest, in the CBD. So that kind of stuff, again, you know, people are making conscious choices to be in Hamilton, to be in the region. So, again, you know, this is going to see the CBD grow and develop, because the more people that you have living and working in the CBD, the more vibrant it's going to be.
It's more viable, I suppose, to have business there.
Yeah, that's right. But you create that vibrancy, and it becomes self-fulfilling and feeds off itself.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we see as the largest landowner in the CBD is, you know, we want to see more people in the CBD, more people working there, and more people living there. And once you do that, you can start looking at things like metro urban rail. So how do we set up rail networks from, you know, Hamilton? So you could live in Te Araha or Tikuiti and catch the train into work in Hamilton. Yeah, Morrinsville, Cambridge, you know, rather than jumping in your car, yeah, and driving in, or living in Hamilton, giving people the choice. These are things that are coming and that we need to push as a region and a community. And, you know, really, you know, focusing that development and getting the critical mass in one place. And then that enables you to put that big infrastructure in place.
So would you want like a train station in the central CBD?
So one of the things that I've been reasonably vocal on, we've got an underground railway station already in the city centre.
Yeah, it goes underneath Centre Place, doesn't
it? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's nuts that we don't use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, there might be a bit of work to do to get it up and going, but, you know, pre-Britomart, we had the only underground railway station in the country, and it was mothballed. So, you know, we've got that infrastructure already there. We just got to use it.
So have you spoken to anyone about how much it would cost to do all that up?
Yeah, you know, it's more a Hamilton City and central government issue around how that would be funded to do up. But I don't think the cost is insurmountable.
So it wouldn't cost as much as, you know, what they're doing with Britomart and all that, with the city rail.
Nowhere
near that cost. Okay.
I mean, it's billions. You know, you're talking nothing like that to put something in place here. But again, you think about how transformational that'll be. You know, having, you know, that a rail network back out into the region, rail connectivity to Auckland, and a bunch of, you know, opportunities for employment in the CBD, yeah, that'd be massive.
Oh, yeah, it would. Definitely agree. And it's right by the bus network as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is coming. Yeah, you know, I think already you're seeing a lot of people that are considering moving out of Auckland, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but, you know, a big one is the welfare of their people, their workforce. You know, so people are making those conscious choices to look, you know, to put their people or bring their people to a region like ours, you know, where they can have a much better lifestyle.
Yeah. Do you get approached by a lot of businesses in Auckland in terms of about them?
Yeah, we get approached regularly, yeah.
Yeah?
And one of the things, you know, you look at, I'm sure you know people that have come out of Auckland to live in Hamilton.
Yeah.
They love it. They never go back. Yeah, we're one of the best kept secrets, you know, how great it is to live in Hamilton in this region.
Yeah, well, there's still a bit of a negative stigma, unfortunately, against the city. So I think that's slowly going away, though.
Yeah, it's definitely going away. You know, definitely, you know, Hamilton, the Tron, yeah, is going to be the city of the future.
Yeah, and you've obviously got some work that you're doing in Auckland as well. You've got a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any plans to expand on that, or you want to expand into Auckland more?
Yeah, you know, Auckland is a big part of our business as well.
Yeah.
South Auckland. And we'll continue to do more development there. Yeah.
Anything you want to give away?
Not today, no. But yeah, you know, you'll definitely see us doing more stuff in South Auckland.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. and you work with so many different parties. Would you ever get into politics? You seem to work with a lot of politicians, or you've spoken to a lot of politicians.
Yeah, no, it's not something I've thought about.
No interest?
Not really, no. No, I enjoy what I do. And I'm really just focused on, making the most of, the opportunities for our iwi and for our region.
Yeah. Is there any developments that you're looking to in other parts of the Waikato, though, or even the Bay of Plenty?
Yeah, we're typically focused on, between the Hamilton to Auckland corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where we see the strategic growth coming and where we have, a reasonable-sized land estate. Our focus is in developing that from a property development point of view. But we also, own, a bunch of farms, fishing quota, forests, own a few businesses, hotels, and a bunch of shares as well. So, things that people probably don't know about us is we invest in private equity, which owns things like My Food Bag. So we've got, a pretty diverse sort of range of interests, but from a property development point of view, we're focused on Hamilton to Auckland.
So how did the partnership with ACC happen? Did they approach you? Did you speak to them? Because they're currently scattered all over, aren't they?
Yeah, so ACC went to market with basically an RFP, which we've responded to, and on the back of wider partnership as well.
Yeah.
We've gone through a competitive process and come out on top.
Right. Was it always a plan to build something where the building will be, though?
Yep.
Yeah. That was always going to be the case.
Yep.
So if it wasn't ACC, it would have been...
Yeah, it would have been someone else. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. It's so, so interesting. Okay. Cool. I think I might wrap up there. This has been a great chat.
Yeah, it's been really enjoyable, and big thing for us. Always happy to share what we're up to, and
yeah. So, if anyone wants to get a hold of you guys, where's the
best ways through our website? Yeah, you can contact us via there.
Yeah, and what's the website?
www.tgh.co.nz.
Okay, and you have social media as well, such as Facebook.
Yeah, we've got Facebook and so forth. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, mainly Facebook is where we focus,
So if anyone wants to keep up to date with future developments.
Yeah, everything's on Facebook.
Everything's on Facebook. Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Chris. That's the show, everyone. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe. And until next time, stay safe.